From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!, live from the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles. Controversy rages with African Americans and Latinos over Al Gore's number two man, Joe Lieberman. He's pro-school vouchers, anti-affirmative action, and supports California's anti-immigrant Proposition 187. We'll hear from Maxine Waters and Jesse Jackson. Also, we'll have a debate between two of the three U.S. Senate candidates here in California, Medea Benjamin of the Green Party and Republican Congressmember Tom Campbell. And as the coronation continues here in Los Angeles, Iraq was bombed twice this week. We'll have a reality check from longtime peace activist Blaise Bonpain. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center in downtown Los Angeles.
Well, in the news, Harold Ford Jr., a rising black star in the South and Al Gore's keynote speaker Tuesday night, said a Democratic victory in the fall would energize a new generation of voters, while some in the party would have us go back. Ford, 30, a centrist Democrat, was cast in Tuesday night's prime speaking role to help portray the Democratic ticket as a fresh alternative to Republican nominee George W. Bush. Ford, the youngest member of Congress, said, I stand here representing a new generation, and he urged my reform-minded Republican and independent friends to back Gore. He has supported free trade, capital gains tax cuts, a constitutional amendment protecting school prayer, placing him well to the right of his father's generation of black leaders.
Animal rights activists opposed to the fur trade protested in front of clothing stores yesterday as demonstrations continued outside the Democratic National Convention. Police arrested about 45 people. Police, including some in riot gear, met the animal rights activists about eight blocks from the Staples Center where the convention's being held. They also kept the public and the media out of a two-block area around a California federal bank while they made arrests. About 200 people gathered on the periphery, clapping, banging drums, and demanding the streets be reopened before police ordered them to disperse. At Edward Beaurevais Furs, where protesters banged on the windows, workers spray-painted over the business's name on a green awning within 90 minutes and prepared to take down a larger sign. Those arrested were charged with conspiracy to commit a felony based on items found in their backpacks, including, well, what the police said was flammable liquid and small fireworks.
A star-studded fundraising gala at the end of the Democratic National Convention will bring in at least $4 million, according to party leaders. All of the money raised Thursday evening will fall under federal contribution limits, so-called hard money, meaning the Democratic National Committee can spend it directly on candidates. The gala is to be hosted by actress Whoopi Goldberg and features entertainment by Barbara Streisand and Enrique Iglesias. The tickets will range from $150 to $20,000.
And Russia is losing a frantic race against time to save 116 sailors before they run out of air in a crippled nuclear submarine as rough Arctic seas kept rescue capsules from docking with the sunken craft. The head of Russia's Navy said the Kursk crew, out of contact since suffering a catastrophic accident and sinking to the bottom of the Barents Sea on Saturday, would probably suffocate if not rescued by Friday. A series of desperate attempts by two small craft to reach the ill-fated submarine was scuttled by ferocious storms and atrocious visibility in the icy sea. The Navy reported that rescue work, quote, did not stop for a minute, even as rescue vessels hovered helplessly above, unable to dock after 9 hours of searching for Kursk's life-saving escape hatch at 4 a.m. Russia time Wednesday.
This news from Mexico City. U.S. farmers shot and wounded a Mexican on the country's 2,000-mile border, reigniting tensions sparked earlier this year by reports of Arizona ranchers hunting down illegal immigrants, Mexican newspapers say. La Jornada newspaper and other media said Alejandro Encinas Velasquez from the Mexican state of Sonora was walking on the Arizona side of the frontier with an illegal immigrant when ranchers fired on him. Velasquez was hit in the left forearm and was not in serious conditions. The report did not say when the shooting occurred. Mexican authorities accused the ranchers of treating Mexicans like dogs. The Arizona ranchers, meanwhile, accuse illegal immigrants of destroying their properties, urinating on crops, and leaving heaps of garbage in their trail.
Russia sharply criticized the United States and Britain yesterday for a wave of air raids on Iraq, saying the attacks would not ease tensions in the region. Foreign Ministry said in a statement that weekend air raids on the southern Iraqi town of Samawa had led to destruction in residential areas and food depots and had caused deaths among civilians. Washington and London have said the attacks were launched against a missile site that was targeting their aircraft.
Federal regulators cleared the merger between radio giants Clear Channel Communications, Inc. and AM/FM Incorporated yesterday, subject to the company shedding 122 radio stations to satisfy federal ownership limits.
This year, let's give the folks at home something to cheer about.
The future just keeps coming at you.
And from where we stand tonight, we can now see the shimmering rays of light that signaled the dawn of the 21st century.
Hail Starfleet Command.
No response on standard frequencies. Curious. I am picking up a multitude of narrowband EM signals.
Let's hear.
I do not believe we can maintain 400,000 troops there much beyond the spring of next year. And that therefore our general position will be influenced. Yes, we will be driven to that decision.
All of this has happened before, and it will all happen again.
I do not believe, Mr. Chairman, that time is on our side.
Will those in favor of the draft resolution please raise their hands?
Mr. Chairman, the time is on our side.
There couldn't be a better time to be alive than now. There couldn't be a better country in which to be born and in which to live than now, because you hold the future.
The fighting broke out overnight in a brutal replay of earlier clashes pitted rival organizations against one another.
The 20th century will be remembered as a century of war.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center in Patriotic Hall in downtown Los Angeles, just blocks from the Staples Convention Center, where the Democratic Convention is taking place. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez for, again, an unprecedented collaboration between community radio and community television. As we broadcast on community radio stations around the country, on community television, public access cable stations, as well as the Dish Network channel 9415 through the Free Speech channel, Free Speech TV.
Well, Amy, day two of the Democratic Convention last night saw both a continuation of dozens of street protests and arrests inside the convention. The Democratic Party leaders sought to quell discontent over the Lieberman selection by Al Gore, and also to bring back to energize the left wing of the party through the speakers, the Kennedys, Jesse Jackson, and of course then to bring in Harold Ford Jr., the congressman from Tennessee. Interestingly enough, it was in effect almost a demotion of Jesse Jackson as the major leader or spokesman in the Democratic Party by having Ford there in prime time and Jackson really, even CNN cut him off in the middle of his speech, and only C-SPAN actually broadcast his entire speech.
And Harold Ford, the youngest member of Congress, African-American Congress member, is a conservative Democrat, important to note, as he took the floor at primetime as opposed to Jesse Jackson.
Yes, but meanwhile, during the day, of course, there was still the fence mending that was being done with the Black Caucus in Congress.
That's right. There's been a lot of controversy here in Los Angeles surrounding Al Gore's selection of Connecticut Senator Joseph Lieberman as his running mate, particularly among African-Americans and Latinos. Concerned about Lieberman's positions on a variety of issues, he is pro-school vouchers, has been anti-affirmative action, supported anti-immigrant Prop 187 in California. Democratic Congressmember Maxine Waters was so concerned that earlier this week she said she's holding off endorsing the Gore-Lieberman ticket. Well, today I caught up with her and asked her her views on Lieberman.
I beg your pardon? Yes, I have. I have. Well, they have been addressed this morning as we talked about vouchers, affirmative action, and criminal justice. I think that he's all right on affirmative action. He's backing away from vouchers, and that on the criminal justice issues, I'm going to meet with him so that I can help him develop a vision for how we can stop imprisoning people on victimless crimes.
And you did endorse the ticket?
Yes, I did. Oh, I'm working very hard on mandatory. That's one of the things I'm going to talk to him about, getting rid of mandatory minimums.
What's your major concern on criminal justice with Joseph?
Well, mandatory minimums is one of them, with the entire Democrats and Republicans. They're all wrong on this issue, and we've got to do something. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That, again, Maxine Waters, Congressmember from right here in Los Angeles.
Well, and despite the concerns of some, Jesse Jackson, perhaps still the most influential Black leader in the Democratic Party, spent much of the day stumping for Gore and Lieberman. Even though he was sidestepped last night at the convention, he addressed it and also addressed the shadow convention of the more dissident elements that are close to the party or opposed to some of the party positions. And we're going to hear some of what Jackson said on the convention floor.
In the midst of great wealth, one in five children still grow up in poverty. It's a moral disgrace we cannot accept. A coal miner dies every 6 hours from black lung disease in Mud Creek, Kentucky, in Hazard, in Nelsonville, Ohio, in Big Stone Gap. Children live in trailers and go to school in trailers. Think of Appalachian. Remember, most poor people are not on welfare. They work every day. They do their heavy lifting. They take the early bus. They work the late shift. Most poor people are neither brown nor black. They're white. They're female, they're young, they're invisible, but they're all God's children. Let's have a one big tent America. On this November, there'll be two teams on the field, two plans and two directions. On the right side, the Republican team is trying to change its uniform colors to blur the differences. But don't be fooled, just look at the team. It's not just Bush and Cheney, but the grizzled old veterans such as Jesse Hams and Dick Armey and Tom DeLay and Bob Barr and Strom Thurmond and Trent Lott and Pat Robertson and Ralph Reed. This grisly old team wants to take the surplus and give it away in tax breaks to benefit those who are already wealthy just to pay for their party. But then there's another team, the team of Gore and Lieberman and Gephardt and Bonilla and Daschle and Wellstone and Jackson Jr. and Charlie Rangel and John Lewis and Jim Clyburn, Luis Gutierrez, Velasquez, Sanchez, Wu. This is the All-American team.
Jesse Jackson speaking last night at the Democratic National Convention. Earlier in the day, he addressed the shadow convention down the street from Staples Center, a kind of counter convention.
Politically, I've learned to make choices. I've learned to make a way when there's hardly a way. On the one hand, in the last 8 years, the tent has gotten bigger. That's impressive to me because I know of smaller tents. When I look up and see Republicans got blacks and browns on the stage, preaching, singing, and breakdancing, trying to send a message. When I look at Pat Buchanan get a black running mate. No, what it really means is that whether you're Pat Buchanan or whether you're a Republican or Democrat, those who were disenfranchised 35 years ago now will determine the next president, the next Congress, and the next courts. That's what it really means. We who are washed, locked out, hands that washed, picked cotton will now pick the president, pick a Congress, and pick the courts. We the people have the power. We must believe we have that power. Tonight, when the year of the century began, blacks and Jews allied. They fought together to make lynching a federal crime. They allied to fight for women's suffrage. They allied for labor to have the right to organize. Louise L. said the first person he saw in the concentration camp with a gun was a black soldier as a liberator in the concentration camps of Europe. In 54, there was Thurgood Marshall and Constance Martin, and there's also Joe Ryan and Jack Greenberg. And our movement in the 60s, it was Medgar Evers, but also Swerner, Goodman, and Cheney. When we overcome racism and anti-Semitism and fight together, we change America. We the people have the power. And so after this campaign today, it's not about race in the end, not religion. It's about resources. When Bush says, leave no one behind, what about 42 million Americans without health insurance? They're left behind. What about 1,500 who die a day from cancer? They're left behind. What about coal miners who die for 6 hours from black lung disease? They're left behind. What about second-class schools and first-class years? We must leave no child behind our budget. Include all Americans in the budget. It's about resources, about resources, about resources, about resources, about resources, about resources. And so I will not be neutralized by a tough choice. When I make a decision, I choose to go with. To me, it's not just going Lieberman, it's going Lieberman, it's Maxine, it's John Conyers, it's Daschle, it's Gephardt, it's John Sweeney. When you walked that convention in Philadelphia 2 weeks ago, you saw on the stage, you saw a face without a substance. Tonight you will see 40% labor, 1,000 blacks, 1,000 Hispanics and Asians, half women. We have the power to change the course of our country. I say for Bush and Cheney and Strom Thurmond and Jesse Helms and Tom DeLay, we in fact must defeat them. We have that power. I will choose to support not just Gore and Lieberman. I support the Congress. I support new courts. You know, when I look at it, Papa Bush gave us Clarence Thomas. Baby Bush in Florida killed affirmative action. George W. gives us all Slick Cheney. I say on November 7th, let's fight back and stay out the bushes. God bless you and keep hope alive.
That was the Reverend Jesse Jackson speaking at the Shadow Convention yesterday, just before he gave his major address at the Democratic National Convention. Democracy Now! Did catch up with him after he spoke to ask him about his support for Joseph Lieberman.
My position supporting Lieberman is fairly clear. I applaud the fact that you now have in this convention, a Southern Baptist and Orthodox Jew, that you have a convention 40% labor, 1,000 African-American delegates, 1,000 Hispanic Asian delegates, half female, half male. That's the American dream ticket. That's the American party. And I think Gore, by that act, created excitement and interest, because what I know is historically, when blacks and Jews who experience shared suffering and shared pain and shared values. When they share in protest, they tend to make America better, but for everybody. Thank you very much.
See you in the convention, Jess.
And that was the Reverend Jesse Jackson, his night last night at the Democratic National Convention. And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! When we come back, we'll be joined by two candidates for California Senate, a member of the Green Party, as well as the Republican candidate. Unfortunately, we could not catch up with the Democratic candidate to have her join us. And this is the race for the Senate in California. Stay with us.
For a week or a month or a year, with the blood and the ink of the headline and the sound of the crowd in my ear, you might ask what it takes to remember when you think that you've heard it before. How governments lie to their people and how nations are driven to war. There are shadows on the faces of the men who fan the flame. Those wars that have fought in places we can't even remember their name. On the radio, talk shows and TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom and how we come to the aid of a friend. Well, who are these ones we call our friend? These governments killing their own? Or is it the ones you can't take anymore, so they pick up a brick?
And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center in downtown Los Angeles. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we continue with our community radio, community television broadcast around the country and on the web at www.democracynow.org. Well, we attempted to reach Senator Dianne Feinstein throughout the day yesterday to join us for a debate for the California Senate seat that she now occupies. We called her various numbers. It's all message machines. We went through the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. They said she hadn't returned any of her calls to any one who is calling in today that were done through them. So we are left with the other two candidates and very pleased that they could join us. We're joined right now by Medea Benjamin, who is the Green Party candidate for the U.S. Senate in California, founder of the human rights group Global Exchange in San Francisco. Congressmember Tom Campbell, a Republican congressmember from this area. What particularly you're...
Silicon Valley, San Jose.
Silicon Valley and San Jose, challenging Dianne Feinstein for her Senate seat. And we welcome you both to Democracy Now!
Nice to be on the show. Thanks,
Thank
Amy and Juan.
Thanks for having us. We'll get this mic fixed yet.
Well, you just listened to Jesse Jackson talking about your grizzly party.
Yes, I did. He said grizzly old team was the phrase. I'm thrilled. I think that Senator Lieberman was an excellent choice. I'm glad that Senator Lieberman supported the end of the use of race by government. I supported the end of the use of race by government in 209. I opposed 187, and it's interesting to me to learn that he supported 187. I didn't know that. For those not in California, 187 cut off social services to those who are undocumented, including, and this was why I opposed it, children who would be thrown out of school because their parents broke the law in coming here, or people with communicable diseases who ought to get medical treatment as a public health hazard. I opposed it, and apparently Senator Lieberman did not. That's an interesting choice, and I'm glad. And on that one, I'm not glad because I think he was wrong. But I'm glad that he does support a limited use of vouchers for the very poorest, least performing schools, for children in the least performing schools. He apparently voted for an experiment in Washington D.C., and I think that's right for those children who would otherwise not have a chance.
In terms of the voucher issue, of course, the viewpoint of many, both within the Democratic Party and outside of it, is that this is an attempt to in essence begin the dismantling of public education rather than take the responsibility for raising the education levels of all the children that are in the public schools and investing enough money in reducing class sizes to to improve education. What's your response to that?
Well, I disagree, and I do want Medea to respond too, but just to finish on my response, the key was net new money. And the proposal in the District of Columbia that Senator Lieberman supported and I supported was net new money. So it wasn't taking a dime away from public schools. And in California, the proposal that Governor Wilson put forward was net new money for the 5% lowest performing districts. And we have a surplus in California, so you could afford that without taking a dime away from public schools. You would give those who are trapped in the worst schools a chance that they wouldn't otherwise have. It's not, I can't understand the theory that you should never experiment with anything new because it is the first step towards a terrible perdition outcome. No, if you feel that way, you'll be stuck in the status quo rut forever. If this helps the lowest income, if it helps those caught in the worst schools, God bless it. If it doesn't work, if it undermines the quality of the public school system, stop it. But what's wrong with trying?
Medea Benjamin.
Well, I'm a firm believer in the public school system. I have two children. My daughters have all gone through the public school system. I've had to fight here in California, the richest state in this country, for rooms. My daughter went to school in a bungalow where it rained when the water came into the school. We had to fight for textbooks. We have to fight for after-school programs. Something is wrong in this country when the public schools are so underfunded. And here in California, we are number 40 per person in spending on schools. So I say rather than create more of an apartheid system between private and public schools, what we have to do is shore up the public school system. That's the basis for a democracy, is a public school system where everybody has equal opportunity. They don't have it now.
Medea Benjamin, why are you challenging Dianne Feinstein for her Senate seat here in California?
I'm challenging Dianne Feinstein for her record on so many issues where I feel she is out of touch with what the majority of people in this state want. I have been working very hard on the trade issues, been very involved in protest against the World Trade Organization, these free trade agreements that disregard workers' rights, health, safety, environmental standards. Dianne Feinstein has been not only a supporter of these trade agreements, but an architect of them. I disagree with her on privatization of schools, of hospitals, of prisons. I disagree with her on her position on the death penalty. She's pro-death penalty. I disagree with her on many of the environmental stands she's taken, like the Headwaters Agreement that she did, where she gave a criminal, Charles Hurwitz, $380 million. Of taxpayer money for saving a small portion of the forest. I disagree with her on her issues around campaign finance. She is one of the candidates that takes money from just about every nasty corporation that you can think of. And I think people in California deserve better.
What about the issue of free trade and California clearly being on the border with Mexico is impacted by the developments in free trade as well as by the continuing situation of the economic crisis in Mexico that continues to drive so many Mexicans here. Just a few days ago, the newly elected president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, said that he is going to call for to move toward open borders and a common market between the United States and Mexico. What do you, either of you feel about that?
Congressman Tom Campbell, Republican candidate for Senate.
We benefit from NAFTA. Americans and Californians benefit from NAFTA. Mexico benefits from NAFTA. I think President Vicente Fox is a breath of fresh air for Mexico. He's right to call for more investment in Mexico, particularly in the northern provinces. America ought to be his partner, not his antagonist. I'm very optimistic that we can move away from this period of antagonism that we had when Prop 187 was so prominent in California. I opposed Prop 187. I see a value of having Mexico nearby. As to moving towards complete open borders, I don't think so. You cannot, without having a huge effect on the social services in the United States, have a complete open border. The wage rate in the United States is substantially higher than the wage rate in Mexico. If you had a complete open border, there would necessarily, just from law of economics, have a huge influx and a pressure upon our social services network that we could not sustain. But what you can do is see increased specialization, with Mexico producing goods that are relatively labor intensive, America producing goods that are relatively capital intensive, both sides making out better. And then eventually, as the economy of Mexico improves and the economy of the United States improves, you will see less and less tension at the border and recognize the value that we have of having this tremendous resource called Mexico instead of calling it a tremendous burden called Mexico on our southern border.
Madhya?
Well, I'm an opponent of NAFTA. I think the trade agreements should be fostering a upward race to the top rather than a race to the bottom, and I think NAFTA has been terrible for workers on both sides of the border. And I think it's very interesting. I was recently in Mexico looking at U.S. companies there who are producing clothing and found that workers working in the factories in Mexico were so anxious to come to the United States, still wanted to get out of those factories and cross the border into the U.S. because the wages the U.S. companies were paying them were so low. So I think one thing we could certainly do is put the pressure, and I would do it through legislation, were I in the Senate, that U.S. companies have to pay a living wage no matter where they're working. Of course, they don't pay a living wage to workers in factories here in the United States, and they certainly should. But if workers in Mexico, anywhere else in the world that they're producing, were paid a living wage, they would much rather stay in their own communities. Because, you know, Juan, from your experience in Latin America, that people don't want to leave to come to the United States. It really is out of economic desperation. And we could do a lot to help bring living standards in Mexico up.
Why don't we talk a little bit about crime, fighting crime, and the drug war, because there may be here areas where both of you agree. In terms of the increasing, the explosion of the incarceration rate in this country, we have 2 million people in the jails now. What do you feel is being done right and wrong in the drug war, and what would you do differently if either of you were senator?
Do you want to start? The incarceration rate for drug offenses has gone up tenfold since 1980. Tenfold. It has a racial impact that is serious. 60% of those in jail for drug-related felonies in state prison are black. 11% of the users of illegal drugs are black. In federal prison, it's 42% are black. You cannot deny that the black youth using crack cocaine is far, far more likely to go to jail for a far longer time than the same-aged white using powdered cocaine. So this is where present war on drugs has led. And we, Medea and I, did a joint conference on this. I'm going to yield to my colleague in just a second, but let me finish on this by saying one of the clearest mistakes we're making is going into Colombia with $1.3 billion, 63 helicopters, U.S. military advisors spraying the fungicide on the crop, drenching citizens in what will cause illness, supporting a government that has had a human rights criticism for many years in a 35-year-old civil war and claiming that this will solve our problem. We love in America. We love to blame other countries. It's Colombia's fault. It's Mexico's fault. No, it's our fault. And if you took that $1.3 billion, just use as a rough estimate $1,000 per intervention, you would be able to cut those waiting for drug treatment in America in half. We have 5 million addicts looking for treatment. 2.1 get it, 2.9 don't. That's where the money should go.
I just want to say one thing, and that is that people hear whirring in the background. We're not in Colombia right now, but we are here in Los Angeles, and there have been a lot of helicopters flying overhead dealing with the protesters and the perceived threat. I'm not saying the perceived threat of the Democratic delegates, but the protesters who are in the streets. Medea Benjamin, your response.
Well, I applaud Tom Campbell on this one because I think he's really come out there in full force saying that the war on drugs has been a failure, recognizing the racist nature of this war on drugs, that something is deeply wrong with a society that incarcerates one out of every 147 people. I think that we both probably agree that we have to put treatment over incarceration, that the 400,000 people who are in jail for nonviolent drug offenses shouldn't be there. And probably I would say, Tom Campbell, are we in agreement against three strikes and mandatory sentencing?
I'm not necessarily in agreement with you on that, but I am in agreement that we should be careful about increasing or expanding the reach of mandatory sentencing with the kind of results that we've seen.
Well, I certainly am against three strikes, mandatory sentences. I think we have been both in agreement on issues like medical marijuana and needle exchange, but certainly the main issue is to treat drug addiction as a public health problem.
You're listening to Medea Benjamin, Green Party candidate for the Senate in California, and Tom Campbell, a Republican Congress member who would like to be Republican Senator of California. And we have an empty seat here. It is Dianne Feinstein's. But unlike the Democratic-Republican National Debate Committee, we have not excluded anyone. She has just not returned our calls to participate in this debate. Now, the two of you sound like you have more in common than you disagree on. And yet, what about Dianne Feinstein's position, the person that you are both imposing, the incumbent who is favored to win? It sounds like we've got conservative and liberal lines blurring here.
Medea, would you like to answer first? Otherwise, I'll go ahead. I'm happy to alternate on this. My take is that there is a huge difference between me and Dianne Feinstein on spending. And it may be that the differences in the spending area reflect a huge philosophy difference as to where power should be. I think power should be with the individual, with government if necessary, but at the local level as much as possible. I believe Senator Feinstein's record in spending is one of the highest in the whole Senate. In fact, the National Taxpayers Union Foundation ranks her the number one most willing to spend money, even ahead of Barbara Boxer in the U.S. Senate last year. They ranked me the least willing in the U.S. House. Why am I unwilling to spend as much as she will? Because when the federal government spends, you get control. Clearest example, by the way, harkens back to that drug war. Californians passed a law for medical marijuana. The federal government has decided to ignore this. The federal government is spending money to close cannabis clubs in California. I can't imagine that that is the highest and most important use of federal dollars. So I vote against that kind of expansion of federal power. But it's true in areas like education as well, where the federal government gives mandates to the states that cost the public school systems, mandates such as children with learning with physical disabilities have to be mainstreamed to the maximum extent possible. Well, maybe a combination of mainstreaming and special ed is appropriate. Why don't we have that right to control on our own? Why does Washington say they have it all? And the same for transportation and crime control. So I'll end there briefly, but by saying on economic issues, there's a world of difference between me and Senator Feinstein.
Well, I feel that what the problem is what we're spending on. And I think I disagree with Tom Campbell when it comes to defense spending. Both he and Dianne Feinstein have voted for increases constantly into defense spending so that we have a bloated Pentagon budget of over $300 billion right now, a defense missile defense system that I think Tom Campbell is in support of, that is another $60 billion in a defense system that is technologically unsound and will actually fuel the arms race. I feel we are spending money in the wrong ways. We're putting it into defense. We're putting it into the building of new prisons. We should be putting that money instead into universal health care. We are the only Western industrialized country that doesn't have universal health care, and we should be putting it in our education system. And I feel that these are indeed issues of national security.
Tom Campbell, you sued the Clinton administration over the bombing of Yugoslavia. Is that right?
I sure did. Our case is pending in the Supreme Court of the United States. The President of the United States violated the War Powers Act. He bombed for 79 days. The Congress of the United States did not give its approval. I brought a resolution to the House floor saying, vote for the war or vote against it, but vote. When it came to the Senate, and the House, by the way, voted against supporting the President's bombing. When it came to the Senate, Senator Feinstein and a majority of her colleagues voted to table. So they didn't even go on record. It's another example, it seems to me, of not doing what a senator's supposed to do, which is hold up for the rights of individuals as enshrined in our Constitution. And one of the clearest things the founder said was that calamity of war shall not be in the hands of one person.
And finally, Medea Benjamin, the response of some across the country who say that the Green Party, and especially here in California, plays a spoiler's role, that you don't have a chance to win yet. You are going to get some significant numbers of votes, and your running mate, Ralph Nader, for president will also. What's your response to that?
Well, in the Senate race, I think it would be nice if we had instant runoff voting where you can rank, and then you could put me first and Tom Campbell second. And that, for me, would be a good priority. I think in this race, Dianne Feinstein is actually a more conservative candidate. I wonder why Tom Campbell sticks with the Republican Party. I think he ought to switch parties with Feinstein because his positions on social issues are much better than hers are. So certainly there is not a spoiler issue involved in this race. And to say in general about the Green Party, I think there is a buzz around this country right now around the Green Party. People are excited. People are enervated. People feel like there is an alternative. I just had a meeting today with 200 young people from around the state who, as soon as they get back into school in the fall, are going to blitz their campuses with the Green Party message. For young people, for a lot of people in the Latino community, we are reaching new communities, and I think the best thing of all right now is the Green Party are getting new people to vote, people who have been cynical, apathetic, turned off by the system. So I think the Green Party is the best thing that's happening to the system right now, calling for corporate accountability, clean government, civic participation. It's a breath of fresh air.
Juan, might I add just one word? I think Medea is doing the right thing. And it's said that third parties have the effect you describe. I don't like that ever. Somebody who so believes in what they believe that they will not just go with the easy route, but to find their own party closer to their own identity, deserves our praise. And incidentally, the libertarians, I think, are to be praised as well. Libertarians tend to take votes from Republicans, so I'm not just self-serving in saying this, that maybe Greens might take votes from Democrats. Both represent something good in our country and should be encouraged, and no one should ever say you don't have a chance. It's not American.
Why are you a Republican, Tom Campbell?
Freedom, individual freedom, smaller government. The size of government is inversely proportional to individual freedom. And the Republican Party, for all of the points of disagreement, which most of the voters know, the Republican Party, in my mind, still is the best representative of smaller government and thus more individual freedom.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you both for being with us. Tom Campbell, the Republican congressmember from California, vying for the seat, the Senate seat of Dianne Feinstein, and Medea Benjamin, a Green Party candidate for Senate.
Amy, can we give out our websites to the listeners?
Go ahead.
www.mediaforsenate, all written out, mediaforsenate.org.
M-E-D-E-A.
And campbell.org. I was lucky I got it before the Campbell Soup Company. So just spell Campbell, CAMPBELL.org.
You better watch out. You could be sued for patent infringement.
Hey, I had the name as legitimately
copyright,
as
huh?
They do. They better be worried or I'll sue them.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! And as you can hear from the buzzing overhead, we are in Los Angeles at the Democratic National Convention. Stay with us.
Ooh, a fight for the corporations.
Nomination time.
Come on, we're gonna nominate a presidential candidate.
Corporations call the shots.
Come on, y'all rich people, and have a good time.
Well, there's two parties that we love so dear. We want a president to last for 4 years. Oh, but we don't care which one you choose, because we own the Democrat Party and Republicrats too. Come on now.
Nomination.
We choose the choices, now the choice is up to you. We are the
corporations.
We're gonna celebrate no matter which party you choose. Let's party. It's time for the class to come together to increase our wealth beyond our measure. Today DC, tomorrow the world. Come on.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we broadcast from the Independent Media Center in Patriotic Hall, just blocks from the Staples Center. And as the protests go on outside, so do the helicopters buzzing overhead. though many lenses of the news media have been focused on the coronation here at the Democratic Convention, there have been some very serious stories developing this week across the world. Yes, Iraq was bombed twice this week. Attacks on residential areas in the southern town of Samawa resulted in civilian deaths. Those raids also led to the destruction of a significant food depot. Today and yesterday in Los Angeles, more than 1,000 people rallied against the U.S.-led U.N. sanctions on Iraq, as well as the ongoing bombing of Iraq. With the Democratic Convention in full swing, we turn to a reality check with longtime Los Angeles activist Blaise Bompain. He was in the streets at the Iraq demonstration, a former Mary Knoll father. In 1966 and 1967, he was expelled by the government of Guatemala for his work with unions on hygiene and education. He came back to the United States. He got married to another Mary Knoll, a Mary Knoll sister, Therese Bonpain. He worked with Cesar Chavez in the 1970s, worked with the Nicaraguan government. And he and Teresa Bompain founded the Office of the Americas, where he's been a director ever since. We welcome you to Democracy
Now. Thank you,
Now.
Amy. Good to be here.
Thank you, Amy. Also went to Baghdad in 1991.
Yes. Well, Blaise, let's begin. The bombing continues. I'm amazed at the number of Americans, even American journalists, who are not aware of the continuation of attacks in Iraq. And what have you been attempting to do to raise the issue beside the demonstration here?
Well, we have to meet outside because they're not talking about it inside. They're talking about, you know, irrelevancies. And so we want the world to know about 2 and 3 bombings a week that have taken place. It's just like terrorism for the fun of it, or whatever you may call it. Actually, it's much worse than that. It's genocide because the bombing has killed tens of thousands. The sanctions have killed over 700,000 children, not to speak of the adults by this time. Kathy Kelly, who received our award this year from Office of the Americas, is in Basra now with 5 other people. It's 120 degrees. People are drinking water out of the gutters. The children are dying of curable diseases. We've been asking why people didn't do something during the Holocaust of the Third Reich, and they're still arguing about who did what or who didn't do what the Pope did, etc. There's a Holocaust going on right now in Iraq, and what are we doing about it? That I think, is the question. It's something that people should know about. And the media has been quiet, but not excessively, because the New York Times spoke about these 2 bombings this week. They mentioned it. And it's like, so what?
Blaise Bompain, we just had a debate between 2 of the 3 senatorial candidates in California. Dianne Feinstein, what has been her position on the bombing of Iraq? Dianne Feinstein.
She stated her position?
No, I'm asking, what is her position?
I think she has been supportive of this from day one, as have so many Democrats, and that's the reason why we can't support them. Because we're in a posture now that is an environment of what I call necrophilia, or love of death. It seems the one who does the most killing is the one most apt to be elected. I mean, you have George doing his killing in Texas, but that's not nearly as much as Al can do if he goes back now with another crisis in Iraq. Because we had Desert Storm, then Desert Fox in 1998, which had no approval from the UN. We forget that sometimes. There was no approval for Desert Fox by the Security Council. Now there's a possibility of a renewed major bombing in Iraq, because the Iraqis are not going to accept the new inspectors, in view of the fact that the last inspectors were admittedly spies, and again the major media announced that. So the refusal of the new inspectors may lead to further bombing, and that seems to be what happened, because what was hit in Samawa was actually the collection point for aid, food, supplies, was destroyed in that city. And so was the train station, and so were individual houses. And then, of course, the command post in Florida said, well, we don't bomb civilian targets. So much for their credibility. So it is an extremely serious situation right now. And it's something that I think if people would think about it, they wouldn't tolerate it. But we've become so accustomed to militarism. The issue behind all of this is that we live in a war system and we're accustomed to it. I mean, I had a Marine uniform on when I was in my teens. That was what you did. And we have to begin to think of how you form a peace system to replace a war. It's like dealing with a dinosaur to continue this kind of a system.
Well, even Scott Ritter, the who formerly participated in those inspections, has now turned against the policy, the U.S. policy in Iraq.
He certainly has. He's not the only one that had served in that capacity, but many have turned away from it, realizing it is truly a genocidal policy. And of course, Iraq was our ally during the Iraq-Iran war, one of the long wars, and Saddam was our man in that. He was on the payroll of the CIA, as Manuel Noriega was in Panama. They were to do our bidding, and when they don't do our bidding, they're suddenly called a Hitler, which is very interesting. We didn't call Saddam a Hitler when he was using poison gas against the Kurds. It was our poison gas. We had no problem with that. You know what the problem was in Iraq? They nationalized the oil. Is it worth a million lives to nationalize oil? I think all oil should be nationalized. It's a natural resource, and no one should be able to own the oil. And here we massacred all these people because the oil was nationalized.
Do you think, Blaise Bompain, that the bombing will escalate of Iraq? I don't think most Americans are aware that we, the American people, are bombing Iraq, at least the government doing it in our name. Several times a week, sometimes every day, every other day. You think it's going to get worse?
I think it's going to get worse. We expected an escalation in August, and that is what's happening. And I think it is related to the election. I think it is a time. Remember now, Clinton's in power until January of 2001. And he is always worried about his image, and he's worried about Al Gore's image. I think it wouldn't be at all surprising for them to support an escalated attack. Also in view of the fact that the inspectors will probably not be welcome in Iraq. They will be turned away, and that will be the response to that will be additional bombing. It is so illegal and so entirely immoral that it is hard for us to imagine that people can accept this kind of behavior. But it's the same. It's worse than gang warfare. I mean, gang warfare makes more sense than it does to just in a cold-hearted way bomb a country that is in ashes. That's what I thought of when I was looking at Iraq. It's a country that's now fairly well destroyed, the cradle of civilization, the Tigris and the Euphrates, and all of this great stuff. Babylon is there. We went to visit Babylon. I think it's probably been bombed off the map by now.
What about, we're here at the Democratic Convention, what about the Democratic Party leaders? Which of them have taken a stand on this issue that you feel is should be lauded and supported by listeners out there, and in the Republican Party, are there any who have bucked the tide?
I don't see any great support for stopping the war, one of our longest wars, one of our longest bombing missions in Iraq. There may be a few quiet voices, but it is still the acceptance of a policy of militarism. And a policy really of imperial corporate militarism. FDR spoke about this, and he said that when the private sector has more power than the public state, he said we can call that fascism. That was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Lincoln spoke about it. He was very worried about people that had gotten so fat during the Civil War on selling arms, that he said, I tremble more thinking about the destruction that this will do to the Republic than I trembled during the war. He felt this would destroy our country. And I think it is destroying us at this time.
Blaise Bompain, you're a longtime peace activist outside the Democratic Convention. You don't have the credentials to move in or probably the strength to face the security cordon around the Staples Center. But you have been active on many different issues for your life, Central America and U.S. intervention there, Cesar Chavez, the war in Nicaragua and the U.S. support of the Contras you fought against. And I had the chance to first meet you when we went to Peru together last
yes.
year and were able to get in and see Lori Berenson.
Yes.
Since that time, the U.S. government has actually condemned one of their favorite men in Latin America, Fujimori,
yes.
the president of Peru. But they have not condemned Lori Berenson, the American woman who's being held in Peru, has been sentenced to a life in prison there.
Yes.
What is the latest in her case?
Well, the latest is that a majority of the members of House of Representatives have written a letter to President Clinton asking him to work for her immediate release. About 40% of the members of the Senate have signed a similar letter regarding Lori. This is the kowtowing to dictatorships that we have done for some time. It reminds me of our relation to Somoza, to Pinochet Ugarte, to dictators across the years. As long as they do our bidding, we will support them. When we spoke, as you remember, to the U.S. ambassador in Peru, he told us that Fujimori pays his debts, that Fujimori has let us have a base on the Peru border with Colombia, and all of these great things. And he spoke of Fujimori as some kind of a hero. And now we have once again, after this illegitimate election in Peru, come back to our support for Fujimori. We must ask for the immediate release of Lori Berenson. Her health will not stand up much longer. She has been literally tortured for 5 years, living in a dungeon there in Peru, and we simply have to continue to work for her immediate release. There was no evidence against her. There was no defense for her. There was simply an accusation. An accusatory law went out with the 12th century. And that's the kind of law they practice in Peru.
Finally, in the minute or so that we have left, I'd like to ask you, in terms of the young protesters you've seen out here in the street, many in the corporate media are saying that it's an eclectic, amorphous group with all kinds of causes. You've been seeing the ups and downs of the movement in this country.
Yes.
What's your reaction to the young
it's
people?
It's never been better. I was with these young people in the Santa Monica Mountains as they prepared, and they were sure that they would not even use violent language. There are some police provocateurs dressed in black, whatever they may be. They're referred to sometimes as anarchists. They have no sense of solidarity. They have no sense of majority rule. They're acting against 99.9% of the people here, and they're doing exactly what law enforcement wants them to do, and that is to disrupt the peaceful demonstrations here.
Blaise Bompain, that does it for the show, and
okay.
I want to thank you very
thank
much
you.
For being with us, longtime peace activist, head of Office of the Americas in Los Angeles. Democracy Now!
Bye-bye.
Broadcast from the floor of the Independent Media Center. Our technical director, Grayson Challenger, our producer, Jeremy Scahill. Special thanks to Karen Palmer, Nell Geiser, Carlos Pareja, Linda and Ayanna Cohn, Skip Blumberg, John Hamilton, Dee Dee Halleck, and Prothap Chatterjee. From the studios of the IMC, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles. Breaking with convention, power, protest, and the presidency. The ACLU announces a lawsuit stemming from police attacks earlier this week. We'll talk with longtime activist Tom Hayden, now state senator, and 70 activists are arrested after a critical mass bike ride through the city. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center in downtown Los Angeles, just blocks from the Staples Center where the Democratic National Convention enters its third day. Several dozen protesters were arrested yesterday during demonstrations on the second day of the Democratic National Convention, mostly from animal rights protests and a critical mass action of bicyclists. At least 75 people were taken into custody. 45 were arrested as animal rights activists opposed to the fur trade as they protested outside a fur shop. About 30 people were taken into custody from a bicycle rally, but it was unclear whether they would be charged.
Harold Ford Jr., a rising black star in the South and Al Gore's keynote speaker Tuesday night, said a Democratic victory in the fall would energize a new generation of voters, while some in the other party would have us go back. Ford, 30, a centrist Democrat, was cast in Tuesday night's prime speaking role to help portray the Democratic ticket as a fresh alternative to Republican nominee George Bush. Ford, the youngest member of Congress, said, "I'm here representing a new generation," and he urged my, quote, reform-minded Republican and independent friends to back Gore.
Federal regulators cleared the merger between radio giants Clear Channel Communications and AM/FM Inc. yesterday, subject to the company shedding 122 radio stations to satisfy federal ownership limits and antitrust concerns. Together, the businesses will create the nation's largest radio company. The Federal Communications Commission approval comes weeks after the Justice Department signed off on the deal after seeking divestitures to address competition concerns.
Russian Navy rescuers prepared to lower a piloted escape capsule today to a crippled nuclear submarine in a new attempt to save the 116 sailors trapped inside. In an earlier attempt, Russian crews lowered a bell-shaped rescue capsule to the submarine lying on the Arctic Sea floor, but strong currents and zero visibility blocked attempts at docking. Oxygen for the vessel's 116 crewmen was expected to last just two more days.
The Peruvian government announced yesterday it's fined Latin America's largest gold mine $500,000 for a mercury spill in June that poisoned dozens of Andean villagers. Officials from the Yanacocha gold mine had already pledged to pay all costs for medical treatment and environmental cleanup. Company officials last month cited 70 confirmed cases of mercury contamination. On June 2nd, a truck carrying mercury from the Yanacocha gold mine spilled about 3 gallons of the toxic liquid metal in the village of Churupampa. This according to the Newmont Mining Company of Denver, which has a 51.4% stake in the operation.
And this news from Colombia: 6 school children hiking in the mountains were killed yesterday when they were apparently caught in a firefight between government troops and rebels. But an adult who was with the children said the troops opened fire without provocation and there were no guerrillas in the area. Colombia's Army Chief General Jorge Mora said the children were caught in the crossfire of a battle with rebels outside the village of Pueblo Rico, 40 miles southwest of the city of Medellin.
And a federal appeals court determined yesterday that the Federal Communications Commission failed to adequately take into account consumer privacy concerns and costs imposed on the industry when the agency required surveillance capabilities added to the telecommunications networks. The decision could also have implications for the FBI's new carnivore surveillance system, which can monitor emails. One provision thrown out by the court required phone carriers to provide to law enforcement agents only toll numbers dialed after the subject of a wiretap order connects a call. That was intended to ensure authorities could get the actual number being called, even if a suspect first used a 1-800 number or a calling card. Privacy groups had argued that the provision could give authorities access to information beyond the scope of the wiretap, such as credit card or bank account numbers.
As a strike by 86,700 members of the Communication Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers reached day 10, the issue of job transfers and forced overtime remained the major sticking point to a contract agreement. The unions have stepped up rallies to pressure Verizon for a settlement. More than 1,000 striking workers rallied on the lawn of Verizon Communications facility in Long Island, where a giant inflatable rat became the symbol of a company they accused of wanting to transfer jobs to remote, low-wage locations.
And finally, Texas Governor George W. Bush said he will pardon a Texas prisoner convicted a decade ago of rape after new DNA evidence convinced even prosecutors and law enforcement officials that the man should be freed. Bush will sign the pardon of Roy Kreiner, clearing the way for his release after serving 10 years of a 99-year sentence for the rape of a 16-year-old in Montgomery County, north of Houston. The Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles, which rarely approves pardons, voted 18-0 in favor of pardoning Kreiner, who is 35 years old.
I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year, with the blood and the ink of the headline and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you think that you've heard it before, how governments lie to their people and how nations are driven to war. There are shadows on the faces of the men who fanned the flame. To those wars that are fought in places we can't even remember their name. On the radio, talk shows and TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom and how we come to the aid of a friend. Well, who are these ones we call our friend? These governments killing their own? Or is it the ones who can't take anymore, so they pick up a brick or a gun or a stone? There are lives in the balance. There are people under fire. There are children at the cannon. There is blood on the wire. There is blood on the wire. There is blood on the wire. There is.